Welcome to the podcast. We're so happy that you've joined us today. Thank you.
You can try.
I can pull them up off the top of their head like yeah. I can.
Well, Sam,
you're trying to compete. Is this a stat off?
Well, Sam had like put together this wonderful, amazing list of stats that was like 10 miles long. And I was like, here's three articles that made me feel good.
The articles were very helpful. I enjoyed reading them tremendously.
I was like, here's this article that I found that I really liked.
The first one you sent me, I had actually read too. I was like, why does this look familiar? And I was like, yes.
Yeah, the first one was really good.
I think this one is interesting because every other one we've had some sort of conversation where we're like, ooh, let's talk about this. Or you shared an article that you forgot you sent me. And then a month later, we record an episode. I wasn't part of the conversation this time. And so I am coming in completely cold.
V and I were in the car driving to Quantum Bio together. And she was like, I talked to James about how I really want you guys to do an episode on creative burnout, and I would be there. And I was like,
we had that conversation.
Yeah.
And then she was like,
you were standing right over my shoulder.
Then V was like, and he said, yeah, but then I never heard anything about it again. And I was like, say less, like I'll get on the calendar.
Okay. So, well, there's this thing where if V says something and you say yes, everything moves forward. If you say no, she will stab you or she'll at least threaten to stab.
Or I'll come and find you multiple times and shake you and be like, why is this thing not, where is it?
Or you'll say like, hey, can we do this? Or hey, can we buy this? And if I say no, you go, why are you bullying me? And so I guess sometimes I just say yes and then I'm not thinking because I'm getting bullied.
That's the only way to get things done in this company.
Yeah, is to bully James.
I'm gonna need you to bully some people for Sonic branding.
So we're talking about creative burnout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that, V. This is also exciting, is you're now on the mic.
You're now on the mic.
You were fighting us so hard on not being on the mic, and now you're on the mic. So can you intro with
purpose?
With a special voice?
I didn't prepare a special voice.
You don't need to prepare them. You use them all the time. And there's been so many times where we're like, we got to get you on the mic. These are so fun.
Probably do a funny little voice like in the midst of talking, but I can't do one like prompted.
All right. Well, you can though.
I can though.
Are we recording right now?
Yeah, we're recording.
Okay. Always be recording.
You know, I know Chris always recording, but Chris isn't here. So
yeah, poor Chris.
We're recording. Sick. Scott gave us a couple of thumbs up.
He did.
The intention was not to be on the podcast. I was like, it'd be really cool if you guys talked about mental health. And then Sam was like, let's talk about mental health. And we started talking about mental health in the car. And then Sam was like, let's record a podcast.
Tell me about this car conversation about mental health.
Oh, God.
What triggered it? Because you guys were
Rebel Socials.
Rebel Social Media. Because that day, so this was before you went to Quantum Bio.
No, I think
this
were coming after.
It was.
Because when you all were coming back, you were lit up, smiles on your faces.
Yeah.
Not me.
No?
No.
Why not? Everyone had such a good time watching the dump trucks vomit.
Because that was when I got a message that one of our clients didn't approve a post that was supposed to go out. And I was like,
so then you had a mental health issue?
Then I was just like, I hate it here.
I think it was less of an issue. It was more of like a meltdown for valid reasons, for entirely valid reasons. But then it kind of spiraled into a conversation about just like mental health in general, especially like agencies in the creative field, like what makes you feel less creative? What makes you feel uninspired to do the work that you're supposed to be doing?
I see like three topics right there. Mental health in the workplace, the work, what were the other two you said there?
I already forgot.
I was trying to list in real time. But mental health in the workplace. Last time we talked with Craig about generational marketing, you were here doing yoga.
I was stretching.
On the floor in front of us, which was awkward. But at least you weren't making faces at me and throwing me off like you did before. So that was nice. But mental health in the workplace, I think it was interesting. Or I think is interesting if we're talking about generational marketing, but also generational experience in the workplace and especially agency world, mental health or burnout are topics of conversation versus I'm an older man, almost twice your age.
What generation are you?
It depends on which one you look at. I'm either Gen X or older millennial.
You're like on the cusp.
I'm a cusp. Yeah. But it was like, oh, that's a sign of weakness. Don't show weakness. Right. And now it's like, it's everyday conversation. And if you were to say, actually, you have flat out said, I feel burned out. Don't put me on a project like this. We go, great. Thank you for telling us. We won't put you on a project like that.
Yeah. I've fully sat down with Corey and been like, but there's been different parts to that where I've been like, hey, I'm feeling a little burnt out. I just need to like take a break this week versus like, oh, I can't be put on a project for like the next month and a half at least. Like I can't do it. There's nothing in here. There's literally nothing left.
And what's funny is you do say things like that. Like there's nothing left. I have nothing left in me. Leave me alone. And then you go and do work and it's awesome. So at what point do we just stop listening to you?
Well, I think that's like the recovery period. And again, I'm not coming from this as someone who's experienced in like treating mental health. I just experience a lot of mental health. And like you said, a lot of people in certain generational groups spend more time talking about it because that's kind of the culture that we're starting to grow up around. We're talking more about our feelings. We're more open about them. You see it more on social media. There's like literal like life counselors, like therapists on like TikTok who are like, how do you manage burnout? How do you manage your time? How do you manage this and this? How do you get through the day? Just like, how do you survive? Whereas, you know, older generations were very much like pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is also cultural, like that older cultural American mentality of like, manifest destiny. If you work hard enough, you can achieve all your dreams. Just pull yourself by your bootstraps, which isn't even physically possible. So I don't know why that's a thing that people keep saying.
So how do we manage though mental health in a service industry where oftentimes there's not a human on the other side for a client? It's just, I pay for this. I get this, get it done as fast as possible, as greatly as possible. And we're not in an industry that truly looks across, you know, the work from client to creative and cares. Like, we do have some great clients who do care. I mean, you worked very closely with Megan, who was a guest on this, and she was wonderful.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of clients who very much just want to see the end product. They don't really, I don't want to say the word care, but they are not really invested in the behind the scenes of like how that product or asset gets created. They paid their money. They want what they paid for. And we, on the other side, have to manage both their expectations, our own expectations, workloads, everyone's calendars, schedules. And what I found at Rebel specifically is that the communication part is key to everything, because you can very easily say like, hey, I've projected out that like, by this point next week, I'll be bogged down with all these other things. Like, we need to get me someone else on here to help me with this project. And 99% of the time, unless there's some sort of really aggressive conflicting issue, someone will find you some person to help you, mm-hmm. whether it's adding another designer to the project or spending a little bit of extra time with like a senior level or director level creative writer, whoever it is. You just have to speak up about it. And I think a lot of people are, well, not a lot of people, that's generalizing it, but in general, people are afraid to speak up and admit to the fact that they can't do something because they're worried that it's going to reflect poorly on them. It might reflect poorly back on annual reviews, quarterly reviews, whatever it is. Someone is going to sit down and say, hey, we entrusted you with this project and you weren't able to handle it. We needed to get you help. But when you think about that in the context of real life, like, oh, I just bought like 5 bags of groceries. Hey, roommate, can you help me with these groceries? She's not going to sit there and be like,
you're a bad roommate.
Yeah, you're a terrible roommate. You're weak. How dare you buy all these groceries and you can't even bring them into the apartment? Like, that's not a real life thing that we do.
Yeah. I mean, it's all just a team effort. But in terms of team being client too, I'm gonna grab onto that a little bit more. How often do you get to have one-on-one relationships with clients where it humanizes that experience?
Not very often. Sometimes it's very much like talking through a bunch of other people to the client. The client is talking through somebody else. We're talking through our account leads, account executives. Very often we'll see like, oh, this client needs a logo. Okay, you have whatever, like 2 weeks to do it. But that doesn't really account for, you know, anything else going out poorly or something being mismanaged or, you know, your own time, like you have a block of time and suddenly an entire different project comes through, or all of a sudden you have a giant personal problem to solve, like a issue at home or with your parents or with your siblings or whatever it is. It's very much like, you know, there's business hours and then there's after business hours, but very often our lives bleed into both. Yeah. Like I would love to leave my work at home and I'd love to leave my home at home too. So that didn't even make any sense. Leave your work at work, leave your home life at home.
Yeah. Well, I was in a conversation with a client recently where we were talking about, I want to say relationship, but let's call it the contract that's made between humans in agency work. And most of the times they're buying time or they're buying a measure of time to create some sort of deliverable, but the expectation is not to be defined by time because they want the best, right? They want the extra thinking, the extra attention to detail, but then they measure on time when it's beneficial to them. So I was talking to this client because some work that was done went way beyond what was discussed in terms of polish and passion that went into it. And they were blown away. Like one of them was literally crying. And it was like, well, what happened, right? Did we overspend or do we burn hours? And it was like, no, it was such a human experience that this person did it on their own time. Like they found time for it because they just wanted to see you succeed so much, right? And like that doesn't come in a proposal, right? That doesn't come in a scope of work. That comes through treating people with respect and putting your heart on the table, right? They put their heart on the table. We ended up putting our heart on the table. And now the work is better, right? And it's hard to sell that. It's hard to communicate that. It just, like, how did someone not get burnt out working hard is because heart came before head, right? Is they really cared. And now the work's better. The client relationship's great. We're proud of them. They're proud of us. We're looking to do bigger, better things. And so there's some element there of like effort does not necessarily equal burnout.
I would argue that there's a fine line there still that you can walk because it's like a very old saying of like, do what you love what you do. Like if your job is your passion, you'll never burn out a day in your entire life. But that's not necessarily true because on that particular project, it may have worked out. But if you take that same, like, I agree, you can't quantify quality in a proposal by saying, we're going to give you the best quality work with this amount of hours. Like, that's not something you can ever make an equation for. It's specifically that particular creative person got so excited and inspired by this particular project that they wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And instead of maybe 40 hours that week, they worked 60 hours. But if that same amount of energy is put into every single working week for an entire year, that's an incredibly fast and easy way to burn out because, like, you need to rest, you need to recover, you need to find time to do all of those other things that make you happy, whether it's spending time with your family, doing other hobbies.
Maybe you spend a lot of time in your, like, home life doing your own creating and creating your own content?
No, I actually don't because I do so much creative lifting at work that very often I find by the time I get home and have to pursue my own hobbies, like specifically my creative hobbies, I just don't have the energy anymore. Yeah. And that's just coming from a regular 40-hour work week, but there's like a whole nest of elements there that have just been layering over years and years and years of me being a creative. And I think, you know, there's truth to coming across a very inspiring project and suddenly being like excited about it and putting all of your passion and effort into. Like Burn was incredible because Burn very much was a client that came to us that on the package looked like one thing, like we were going to do something a little bit standard, maybe even a little bit boring. And then it turned into this completely different thing that involved so much extra research that I don't usually do on projects. Color psychology, color theory, looking at the market and trying to navigate how to make the branding stand out, how to make it different. But at the end of that project, despite how good my work was, I was drained. Like I had nothing left.
Yeah.
So the amount of effort and work that I put into it was a lot. But at the very end of the day, when I stepped away from that project and was like, cool, I can slow down and now start doing some other things. I had nothing left. There was just nothing there.
All right. So I'm going to need two things.
Okay.
Cause I feel like we're just talking. I need you to do a voice and we have zero stats so far. Sammy Rubes. Give
we're
me a
talking
voice.
On a podcast?
Yeah, that's so weird.
Well, but
so
I'm
weird.
Used to her throwing out stats yeah. like, oh, like, funny you say that because 33%
of... He was on a roll. I didn't want to interrupt her flow.
Hi, I'm Design Barbie. Graphic design is my passion.
It kind of like creeps me out a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
My favorite, though, is you have like a Alexa one.
An Alexa voice?
It was like a... Or a Siri. It was like Siri.
A Siri voice?
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. We're so happy that you've joined us today. Thank you.
The soundbite right there.
That's good. That's our new, put that into our Sonic brand intro element.
Yeah.
Hi.
We should do it for
We're Revelations Podcast. Welcome.
All right. So how do you calculate or manage or let's say predict burnout? Because we don't necessarily like, yes, there's a call for help, but there's not a hard stop button, right? There's no pull in case of emergency because I'm feeling burnt out or I'm feeling overwhelmed or I'm feeling anxious. And so, yes.
I think it also like can't really be avoided to some extent. Like all the articles I was reading that are talking about like all these surveys where like 70% of people feel burnout and everything like that. Like you're like, wow, that's a huge number of people that feel burnt out. But realistically, like what can you do? It's just, not like burnout will happen.
I think in the creative industry too, it's, and that's not to disqualify any other version of burnout in any other industry. Like we're talking like health industry, education, like all those people are all facing their own versions of burnout because of either the pandemic.
No, ours is
more
important.
We're jobs with highest burnout rates are the ones that demand long hours. So like the doctors, the educators, consultants. But there was a new study that was released that reveals that like creatives are actually like when compared to the general workforce, creative talent is like significantly more likely to be dissatisfied with like the work-life balance and feeling burnt out. And that's because like boundaries, mental health, like the sense of stability, and like their needs are most neglected. Like 60% of creatives have reported feeling burnt out.
I think in general, too, as a creative industry, a lot of people who employ creatives take them for granted because they either think it's something very easy to do. You just click some buttons on a computer and you can make a graphic, you make a video, you just point and chew or click a button. And that typically also comes like from older generations. Like there is a little bit of that technological understanding gap, but still in general, a lot of people who employ creatives very often can find that like, you know, what they say to them to do may sound easy, but in execution, it's actually a lot more difficult. Mm-hmm. Like at my previous job, I worked at a museum and when the pandemic happened, all museums suddenly started switching to video format, you know, trying to figure out how can we get our collections, our artwork, our classes out to the public without having the public to actually come in here. And I had to pivot really, really fast and suddenly learn how to do video and not just learn how to do video, but how to set up audio, how to shoot video, what different formats are better, phone, camera, how to set that up. Then you shoot everything, film everything. How do you process all this like hours worth of data? And then you open up Premiere Pro and you just see buttons and toggles and switches and like 50 different panels that all do something different. And yeah, I learned a little bit of Premiere Pro as a graphic designer. Hadn't used it for like a couple of years to suddenly make that shift
right.
to support an entire institution in, you know, a time of crisis. Was very, very difficult and very, very draining. I spent a lot of hours doing something that I wasn't very comfortable with or wasn't trained to do, didn't have anyone to train me to do so. And there's only so much that YouTube can help you with, because at the same time, you still have to spend that time and energy to teach and train yourself to do something that isn't technically part of your job description.
I think also there's like this weird way that we put a quantifiable value on creative and on art, where it's like you can go to a like Museum of Modern Art and see some painting that's like millions and millions of dollars, but then you like whatever, do it in an agency and something similar, something the same, like isn't going to, like how do you define like the worth of the art?
I hear what you're saying though, in terms of, it's a little bit of what you're both saying of the, it's easy for you because this is what you do, therefore the value is lower or the speed is less. So, I mean, it happened to me today, and it's not that ideas create burnout or create fatigue. It's the pace change. So if every day is a race, right? I've established at this point in my career the ability to run that race in a way that's going to get me through everything that needs to get done, right? So people will look at my calendar and they'll go, ugh, I hate to be you. And I'm like, no, I'm comfortable with this pace. Like this is, I'm used to this, right? But today twice needs like, we need ideas. There's this presentation. We don't have ideas. Like, can you just come up with ideas?
You just generate ideas.
Yeah, just
on
generate
the spot.
Ideas. And then can you create ads for those ideas, like build them, like all that. And then can you do it for that one too? And can we get these both today, regardless of what you're working on? That then change of pace. So now I'm running a marathon, but now all of a sudden I'm sprinting inside this leg of the race. Like that's throwing, what's that going to do? That's going to create burnout, right? That's going to ruin my ability to maintain my pace in order to get to my goal effectively. And that's where I feel it the most, is when someone messes with the my approach to it, or that they change the ask and the deliverable.
Yeah. I think it's different for every creative too, because yeah. Lumping creative burnout for all creatives and measuring it equally across the board isn't entirely fair. Some people are comfortable with a heavier workload. Some people are comfortable freelancing 9 to 6 every single day. Some people are comfortable freelancing 9 to 7 every single day. Some people are like, hey, I'm okay with the hustle grind culture as long as I know that I can take a break like for a month, every few months. Mm-hmm. Some people react differently to different amounts of stress. I found that over the years, like for me, that's definitely changed. I was working full time. I was a grad student. I literally started this job at the same time that I was flying through my master's thesis. And that's something else that nobody really talks about, is that the creative burnout that comes after being a student for a certain amount of years, especially.
You get like all this creative freedom and you can do whatever you want, establish yourself as an artist, and then you go and work and you are given so many boundaries and
restrictions.
Yeah.
And it's different because maybe you weren't taught how to handle a critique properly.
Right.
Or maybe the thing that you were taught turns out not to be useful to your industry at all, and you wish that you had been taught something different. Or alternatively, you spend months and months and months, in my case years, building up an idea for a grand big thesis, and then you finish it and you are exhausted, but instead of, it's like a sports injury, instead of waiting for that sports injury to recover, you start putting weight on it and you start running on it again, and then like 7 months later, you're like, oh, why is my ACL torn? Well, because you didn't let it heal the first time. But you're like, I didn't have time to let it heal. I had to work. I had to come up with all these ideas for all these different projects, logos, ads, branding, all this stuff. And then I think it's pretty common amongst creatives to just like keep pushing forward, because again, it's being creative, something that you're good at. You should just be able to do it. But it's that expectation of just like, just being able to do it that most people misconstrue. And like, I think as creatives too, we don't give ourselves the amount of time that we need to recover from certain projects or from a certain length of working. We just go, constantly cranking out ideas.
Do you think that the education system that set you up, do you think it trained you or equipped you to be aware of and to manage burnout, fatigue, anxiety, stress, any of those things? Because I would say what you're saying there is ultimately your student experience didn't set you up for the career in terms of the work or what was appropriate for it, but also then if it didn't set you up even to manage the stress that the fact that their lack of education is helping to create anyways, that's double miss.
I don't think, A, that's not something that was even really ever discussed in my program. I think for some design programs, and I went to a public university. I didn't go to like a fancy schmancy like RISD, though I have had a professor who taught also as at RISD and was like, you guys are all the same. You just go to a different school. A lot of professors I noticed are people who haven't really been in the industry for a number of years. So their liberal arts programs will often, and this is from experience of like my friends who went to liberal arts colleges, will often put less value on your career than other colleges. So for example, my roommate went, she did fine art.
What do you
art.
Mean by that?
So my friend,
I'm explaining it now. Yes.
Listen, I'm getting there. Oh my gosh. So my roommate,
pressing point two and speed ahead.
So she majored in fine art, and there was a point where
saying they didn't set up fine art students for career success?
No, here.
Because there is no career success for fine art students.
Like it's worse. It's worse. Right. So she did her undergrad in fine art, then her major, her master's in graphic design with me. And, you know, when we both got to the same point in our job search, she was like, they didn't teach us how to set up portfolios. They didn't teach us how to search for jobs. They didn't teach us how to do any of this. They were posting jobs on their own job board for positions in like museums or nonprofits that were paying like $22,000 a year. And we're like, hey, this is a great opportunity. And my friends would get angry and we're like, that's not an opportunity. That's being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
But while my department set us up for success in terms of like, yeah, build your portfolio. This is how you do it. Set up your LinkedIn page, do all these things. Like they didn't discuss, hey, here are all the differences between working in an agency versus working in-house versus working like at a mid-sized agency, small-sized agency, like whatever it is. We would have guest speakers that would come and talk about it. But at no point was the conversation ever highlighted around, you know, the difficulties of working as a one man
like
creative or
like avenues you can go down as a creative.
Yeah. No, none of it's clear. I remember the portfolio review where we met.
No, you don't.
I do. I remember it. Cause I went to a few of them since moving to Connecticut and those few were enough to tell me not to go back.
Yeah.
So I generally skip them. So I remember that one. Because it was a bunch of schools were there and I was shocked because I don't normally sit in the portfolio review. I make an excuse and go do something else. I go find the bar.
Yeah. free snacks table.
And I got pulled in because I skipped doing a presentation. And so it was because I bailed on one thing, I couldn't bail on the next thing. I was getting pressured. Sneaky. So I went into the portfolio review and I was shocked how many times I would ask a question and they would go, I don't know. That's what my professor told me to do. And it would every single time I was asking because what they're showing me was not relevant to the work experience.
Didn't you make someone cry? Wasn't
it? It wasn't that portfolio. It was a different one. And I didn't make them cry. No, that
not because you were mean to
no,
them.
No, they actually said, I wish my professor told me this. Oh. And yeah, but yeah, I did make someone cry.
Yeah, there's definitely a gap, I think, in the like classic educational system of learning how to become a creative, whether it's a writer, videographer, graphic designer,
like practicing the craft and then applying it.
Yeah, versus actually being in a work environment where you have to manage multiple projects, multiple expectations from multiple people, from multiple clients, figure out how to manage your time. You know, those are all strange, nebulous topics to try to teach a student body. But at the same time, you know, one of those core concepts of like, hey, you're going to be expected to be creative for the rest of your life. Mm. Do you understand that? Do you understand how to handle feeling disappointed in yourself, having others potentially be disappointed in your work?
Of not really knowing where this thing comes from?
Yeah, of like maybe how to handle, you know, when you don't know what to do, when you can't find inspiration, when you find yourself comparing yourself too much to other creatives and the jealousy that breeds and the bitterness that breeds. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about that. That's really something that you have to find out for yourself and then if you're lucky, find a community within that particular creative group that are like, hey, it's okay. You're not the only one.
You're not the only one going crazy.
A lot of it I find is it comes down to self-help. Like, you have to figure out how to navigate all of this on your own. And then also somehow feel comfortable with at work to your boss saying, hey, I'm done. There's like nothing up here. Like I need something. I don't know what it is.
See, but have you established any process or approach to when you're in that moment going like, I got nothing, like there's nothing left, right? Nothing in my brain. I lack the energy. I'm just full of stress and, you know, I'm burnt out. Have you ever established a way to overcome that? Because you're saying that and I'm thinking about the times I feel that. And there were times where I didn't, whether it was because it was in the past where this wasn't a safe conversation to have, or I was going to let someone down or something like that. I had to find ways in my own process or system to reset quickly or to shift in some capacity and find that extra energy, find that extra 10% where I could keep pushing. Have you established anything where in case of emergency or in moments of need, you can reset quickly?
I find that for myself, I'm still learning ways to reset quickly because my biggest problem is getting to that point in creative burnout where it's already been happening in the background and I don't see it until the house is literally on fire. Yeah. That's very much a personal me problem and how I approach creativity. I just push through it until I realize, oh, oops, I've been pushing through it. I've been digging down at the bottom of the well and there's literally nothing down there.
See, because mine is, it's not that there's nothing there. It's that there's now too much there. And it's because there's too much going on. There's too many things that need to get done. Things are moving too quickly. I'm here. I'm there. I'm on that call. I'm writing this thing. And it's too much going on. And that is creating the burnout or the obstacles. And so like this very simple thing I figured out like a decade ago, and I'll still do, is I will go do something that's so mindless that it makes me dumber for a period of time.
The tedium, yeah.
Like, not work. Like, I will go to, like, stupid websites, and I will try to shut my brain off to stop thinking. Yeah. And so I actually have to clear it because it's too full, not that there's nothing there.
Are you a night owl?
No. Oh. I'm the exact opposite. I was in bed last night at, like, 8:30.
Wow, can't be me.
Yeah, can never be me.
I imagine my creativity as a well, which I know that's like a pretty common way to, like, you have the creative well full of creative water and then you pull up the bucket and there's your ideas. I still like that analogy because I imagine my creativity as the water inside. When the water runs out, I have nothing to work with. But in terms of managing, I have to like manage my water levels of creativity. So in terms of like how to react quickly on the spot, I've first have had to figure out how to manage like the long-term burnout in general. Like I just had like a couple months ago where I sat down and I was so angry and upset and frustrated by the fact that I couldn't think of anything. I didn't feel happy about any of the stuff that I was making. I didn't feel inspired by anything. I sat down to make a very simple t-shirt design and just stared at my computer for an hour. And very often that's something that I would just come back to. I didn't even want to come back to it. I just passed off that task to somebody else. I was like, I don't ever want to see this ever again. But that was,
there's even times where I've seen you do the, I'm just staring at my screen for an hour. And instead of trying to help, which maybe is a good thing, like I look and I go, it's V. She'll be fine.
Will you literally be sitting there?
She'll just be sitting there staring. But every time, if I just go away and come back, the screen's full. So there's no point in me like coaching or helping because I see that as part of your process.
Because research and stats, you know, they're already there. You just need to find it and then use that as your, that's what I use as my creative inspiration.
Ooh. Yeah.
I stay away from the data entirely.
I mean, figuring out how to search for inspiration in general is different for everyone too, across different fields. Yeah, like, is it an Instagram video that catches your attention and inspires you to do something? Is it packaging? Do you see a really cool font? I fully had to sit down like with myself and say, you very much in like how you tell an alcoholic, you have a problem. I was like, you have a problem. Like you're not doing anything to fix it. And what you're going to do is end up actually detesting your job to the point that you never want to do it again. And I was like, I have no other applicable skills. Yeah, I mean, I do, but I would perish in any other industry of boredom, of just sadness. I was like, I have to figure out a way. I basically sat down with this like 12-week self-help course that teaches you all of those small tools that you need to do things like get yourself out of that immediate, like instant burnout that you feel like you're like, oh, right now this is oncoming. I feel the onset and I'm being asked to do a bunch of different things. I need to figure out a way how to quickly pivot and take care of it or pass it off onto somebody else.
One of my ways of doing that, a like pivot move is, much like an alcoholic, is I deny responsibility or accountability for it. I talked about in the training day of like, it was inspired by Elizabeth Gilbert's TED talk, like 10, 15 years ago, whenever it was, about like the creative gods and the creative spirits and I can go, well, it's their fault, not mine, right? They didn't give me the inspiration I need. So I'm going to go for a walk or I'm going to go do something else or I'm just going to leave and I'll worry about it tomorrow. And they'll do their job so that I can do my job. I just have to wait. And it's not my fault.
That's actually very much like this 12-week course. It was designed and written by Julia Cameron. She was married to Martin. I never know how to say his last name.
Van Buren?
No, Scorsese. Scorsese, yeah, for a time. But she had been approached by a couple of colleagues who were like, we're not even at the creative burnout stage. We're at creative blockage. Like, forget the burnout. Like, I'm not receiving ideas. I can't make ideas. Like, there's nothing there. And she wrote this entire book about it. And I tried it on a whim after seeing a couple of YouTube artists talking about it. Apparently, there's like a challenge going around right now where everyone is like doing it. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll give it a shot. And there's a whole wealth of information in there, including like treating creativity as a god or whatever spiritual entity that is comfortable for you. Like maybe it's the universe, maybe it's just a force of something. But understanding that like you are simply a vessel for creativity to enter into and you just have to express it.
Yeah.
It is not your responsibility to build up that creativity on your own. But at the same time, you have to take steps to take care of yourself and acknowledge, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I'm all these different things. But beyond just acknowledging it, how do you take care of that? Do you spend time doing little things for yourself? Do you spend time engaging with your inner child? Which is, maybe that sounds silly, but I remember being a kid and not worrying about all the problems that I'm worrying about now and being super engaged and invested in all these projects that I was doing and these Lego sets I was building and these Barbie houses. Like, when was the last time I did that fully committed to just having fun? I don't remember.
Yeah, there was a, years ago I heard about this and it was less about the creative constipation and more about, just beginning or starting brainstorming was to picture everything through the mind of a child. Right. And so in the scenario that they were talking about, it was inspired by their kid's fascination by seeing an acorn on the ground and just, they were completely mesmerized. And so they're like, well, what if I could view the world differently? And what's that going to do for my creativity? And that is a pivot, like we mentioned, or another one is pretending you're high or just get high, right?
Just get high.
Or this isn't a method you would use, but there was a brainstorm 2 weeks ago, I think, and the team working on it went and grabbed a couple beers, right? And then all of a sudden the ideas, I was like,
brilliant.
And they're like, yeah, a Guinness actually helped us get two ideas faster.
My sister will study she calls it her study cider. She's an actuary, so she's been studying for her fellowship. And
what's an actuary?
She calculates risk for insurance.
Oh,
I know.
I've met her. She didn't seem super boring.
She is the smartest person in any room she walks into. I promise you.
I believe you.
She asked me to help her study for a test. And I was like, yeah, of course I'll help you study. And she hands me a flashcard. She's like, read it. And I was like, I can't read this. I turned it around and she like says some nonsense and she's like, did I get it correct? And I'm like, I don't know. I can't read either side of this flashcard. Like, what but, is so she's, literally Greek?
She's drinking a hard cider.
So she drinks hard cider while she studies. And then my dad.
Does she need then a hard cider to remember it for the test?
I don't think so. But well,
because I learned Italian in bars.
Had the best test of her life when she drank a couple margaritas before and then woke up. But my dad, she'd gotten my dad the same ciders, and he told her that he drank like half of a cider and then went back to work and had the most productive work like couple hours ever. She's like, see, drinking the hard cider works.
I had that experience yesterday where I forgot to ask for decaf in my latte. I can't have caffeine for health reasons, but I forgot to ask for decaf, and they put like a full shot of espresso in it. And I think I did like 8 hours of work in 5 hours. It was just like a rocket ship. The problem is that that's not sustainable for me.
No, I used to be on Adderall when I was younger, and
the magic of Adderall. It was
amazing. I fully recommend it for anyone who wants to get a lot of work in. My fear was I was like, someday I'm going to stop taking this and I'm not going to be able to think. I'm not going to be able to work. I'm not going to be able to survive as a human. So I need to stop taking this now and figure out how to exist without it. Yeah. And so I did.
That's why I was like, I think I'm like for sure 100% on the ADD spectrum, because if I need a stimulant to be able to focus, and I've thought about it for like years that I probably have some form of ADD or ADHD. But I also have that small fear of like, if I start using like either Ritalin or Adderall, like I won't be able to function, because I would say that currently I function well enough to be successful at everything that I'm doing. And some people just can't, and that's fine. If you need the medication, you should take it, because if that's the only way that you're going to get shit done, there's nothing wrong with it. But at the same time,
I miss it often.
It's learning how to trigger your hyperfixation periods.
Yeah. But it's also,
oh yeah, they're getting that workflow.
Flow. Every time you interrupt my flow, I'm like, James.
Yeah.
I know, and I do it sometimes just to be a jerk.
Piss me off, and I don't think you are lowering Rebel's productivity when you interrupt my flow.
Yeah, but isn't it
you
nice that we get to say hi to each other?
Dollars.
I told you I'm not doing the thing where I'm, because I've thought about this. I thought, because I get her to turn her music off.
Oh.
And then I've thought about doing, and then just walking away, just to mess with her. And I refrain from that. At least I actually have a question to ask you.
It's like, sometimes I find that people bother me less when I just play the music out in the open and don't wear the headphones. Like, they almost like need to bother me when I'm wearing the headphones.
Yeah, it's
that's
like
why they're there. That is the
psychological
do not
trick.
Bother me. Yeah.
It's like, ooh, you don't want to listen to me? Well, now you have
well,
to.
Well, too bad.
You should add like a little pop-up flag to the top of your headphones. Like if it's like a red flag.
Do not bother
do
me.
Do not
I'm
bother.
Busy.
Do
I'm
not
working.
Disturb.
You know, you can just steal my old office.
I don't really like your old office.
There's no windows in there. That's the other thing.
I prefer my table.
There's no windows. There's no fresh air. Like there's.
I actually prefer what was the SEO Cove and then they took it apart. I think the most furious I've ever been at work was when I came in and they had moved my table and chair.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm quitting.
See, I don't want a window because I get anytime there's movement, I have to see, is that someone? Are they coming here? Is that an animal? And I.
So you're a squirrel is what you're admitting to. Yeah.
So I do not like the window.
I mean, that's like a great example of finding what works for you as a creative, because some creatives are like, if I don't work in front of a window, I'll die. Yep. Which I told to Corey once. I was like, Corey, if you ever make me work in the back of the office away from the window, I will just shrivel up and die. Like I need natural
for me,
light.
Just labs in general. It's too dark.
Yeah. I need natural light. I need to be able to see some sort of nature outside, or at least like have a plant on my desk. Some people are very content to like
if
work
you guys
literally
start
in the dark.
Pumping club music in labs and like LEDs and everything, I'll come on up. But
well, we could try. We're getting some lamps up there and some LED light strips.
Let me know.
But that's the other thing
I'll
too.
I'll control the aux.
Is that like during the pandemic, everyone was forced to convert their homes into their own personal offices. Everyone suddenly had a work setup that maybe, you know, didn't work for a while, but then eventually worked for them, and then having to take all of that and move into the office. Some companies have people coming back in full time, five times a week. And it's weird because prior to the pandemic, I was like, of course I can show up to work 9 to 5 for 5 days a week, like everyone else. That's super normal. But after the pandemic, I like, I can't. I need that time to work by myself in my own personal safe space where I'm comfortable. I can wear whatever I want. My desk is set up the way that I want it to be set up. I can put on whatever music I want.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about anything else. Here, I'm sharing the space, and the collaboration aspect of it is great when I have to, you know, find another coworker to research or ideate with or whatever it is. But I very much also get burnt out on the social interaction of it.
Yeah. See, I'm the opposite, where I burn myself out with the home, working from home, because the structure.
But you love social isolation.
But the structure of the office helps me maintain my flow, my pace, right?
Okay.
If I am working from home, so I'm here 5 days a week by choice. And if I work from home, like say I wake up, it's 5:30, right?
Ew.
Go out with the dogs, feed them. I will sit down and start working and not stop until after 6. Like, I'll keep going.
I wonder what that's like.
Because the fact that I can't look at people in the eyes, I can't talk to people, I can't see things that are occurring, I feel like I'm missing so much. Mm. And so I have to work faster and harder, and I have to be more attentive and talk to more people, mm-hmm. and I need to make more things and prove myself, and like, I'll stress myself out. I will get burnout from working at home. But here in the office, it's almost like it's like fun.
Which
it's
is funny because you think that you would be working more in the office. That's what some people tend to. They're like, oh, we got to come in to increase productivity.
Do we got any stats about like happiness levels versus like a hybrid work schedule, a full time in office work schedule? I really like the hybrid because I very much. There was a point in the pandemic where I was like, if I have to look at my bedroom for 8 more hours, I will sleep outside in the courtyard. I don't care. I was so sick. Like, also, I live in an apartment. I don't have space to make my own office. But once we returned to the office, there was like an even amount of social interaction and then isolation that I was like, this is it. This is like my happy medium where I can recharge from constantly talking and interacting with people in real time, but then also still get the socialization that I very desperately need and crave, mm-hmm. but just not too much of it.
No, I think the hybrid thing is an ideal scenario, especially when there's some fluidity to it. Like even
there was a study done in 2022 that revealed that hybrid workers are like 22% happier.
Ooh, a whole 22%.
A whole 22. That's nice.
Even 22.
Well, I mean, I look at
specifically millennials.
Sarge, who's back here as our producer engineer today, because the entire team is working from home because they all had stuff they got to get done. It's very heads down type work. So he's like, do not come in. Do not let people distract you. Focus on you. Focus on your work. Like that, our ability to just pivot or change or design our experiences, our days to be fast paced, to be heads down, to be focused, whatever it has to be, is pretty ideal.
Yeah.
See, it's crazy it took this long for the world to figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, people talk about work-life balance all the time, but it actually has an impact on your mental health, your mood, your happiness, how much time you spend with family, how much time you spend with your pets. Like, yeah. I get sad now if I miss an entire day without seeing my cat because she got so used to me being at home. And I'm like, yeah, well, this little tiny creature depends on me, wants to see me. Like, if I'm just not home all the time, she just exists in an empty apartment. Like, that sucks.
Well, I'm fortunate the dogs have each other. They can go outside. They have fence and yard or dog door. They have their window seats where they like to watch everyone take walks. And then my neighbor, she's 16. She goes every day for a period of time to hang out with them. And so they have a little attention. But we are returning back to dog-friendly workplace.
Yeah.
First
dog was here on Friday. Yeah. I know because
can you give us a heads up when you're bringing your dogs in so I can plan to be in the office?
When I bring my dogs specifically? Yeah, it'll be a Friday though. You're not here on Fridays.
You can come in on a Friday, like every few weeks. Just choose to come in on Friday.
I like Fridays though, because it's like no one, like 95% of the people do not come in on Fridays.
Same with Mondays.
Fridays have like a fun, like
Fridays
party
are when
vibe.
I want to like wrap things up. Like when if I can finish a little early on a Friday, like I'm going to finish early.
Oh, well, what you're missing is Fridays. It feels like people are playing music out loud more. It's like people are ordering food. Everyone leaves early to go to happy hour.
I was here on Friday. It was a ghost town, but also it was like pouring rain.
Yeah.
I came in at one because the power at my complex went out. So the only choice I had was to come into the office, and then I watched Mo eat like 7 lollipops and like a York peppermint patty.
Who?
Still Mo. Bryn's dog. Giant golden, I think it's a golden mix.
Peppermint patties?
He eats anything.
He stole an entire bag of cookies from my office more than once.
He's like a Roomba in dog body. He will eat anything and everything. It was pretty incredible.
It was nice having him in the office though.
It was. Like, I came in like very,
despite him eating my cookies.
Yeah. I was like a little bit bummed. I was like super productive in the morning, and then like the power went out and like all this other stuff happened, and I come into the office and like I forget my umbrella. I'm not wearing a raincoat. It's like fucking pouring, and there's like just like a giant dog, and I'm like, oh my God, it's a dog. And he was so happy to see
what
me.
What you're saying is the key to creative burnout, to ending creative burnout, is dogs in the office.
It's dogs.
Yeah, dogs.
There's... I mean,
strong correlation.
Definitely. Yeah. Dogs, cats, whatever little critter makes you happy.
Wait, hold on. You don't have a stat?
There's not like a like true stat on if it helps with creative burnout, but there was one study done with like canine companionship that found that 34% of employees like agreed that the dog helped them be more creative and come up with more creative solutions.
Only 34. Issues.
34%. 52% felt neutral.
Oh, 29% those people are horrible.
Agreed. Potentially could increase creative output by approximately 60%.
I think it just increases serotonin levels. Like, I think you're just happier and like the creativity comes to you a little bit easier. Like, I wouldn't say that having a dog in the office increases my productivity or creativity because I'm petting the dog. I'm not working.
Right.
Yeah, 86% strongly agreed that the dog helped elevate their mood.
Yeah, it's more about mood too.
And strengthen, 53% said that he helped strengthen the relationship with other coworkers. So yeah. Collaboration.
Yeah. Because you guys are like talking about the dog, petting the dog at the same time.
Watching him eat chocolate.
Watching him eat a York peppermint patty in the wrapper.
It helps a lot with stress though. 95% said that he made them feel less stressed.
There you go. Yeah. We
petting,
need more dogs.
Petting animals is said to reduce stress, period.
We need like a class hamster.
We do.
Rebel mascot.
Yeah. A rebel hamster.
Should we get a hamster for labs?
A lion for labs? mini lion?
We can get it. I mean, considering
is it tough. Cruel to like domesticate a lion and keep it as a pet?
Yes.
Yeah. But we can get a hamster, a guinea pig.
We can get it. Yeah.
I sold my guinea pigs on Craigslist when I was like 13.
You sold them on Craigslist?
My dad tricked me. He told me that if I sold my guinea pigs on Craigslist, he would get me a cat. And I was like, hell yeah. A cat's
way better. Well, 13's too old to have a guinea pig, right?
No. 13?
Adults have guinea pigs.
It's like a middle schooler.
No.
It's like a middle schooler.
Guinea pigs are like 7 to 11.
I know full-grown adults who have guinea pigs.
We sold them. There are two of them. We sold them for $25 each. Same person. And I never got a cat. And he doesn't remember this conversation. He's like, that doesn't sound like me. And everyone's like, David, that was you.
See, I would classify that as childhood trauma because I can tell you for sure that my cat improves my mood. And the fact that you were denied.
Well, I already had a cat. I wanted another cat.
Oh, I see.
It was a family cat.
So you were just being greedy.
We had the family cat and then I wanted the cat of my own. Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that the cat chooses.
Now I'm an adult and I can get a cat of my own, but I don't really have the space, which is sad. I have my sister's cat and he's the worst cat to ever exist.
Cats are very important to creative health and to creative burnout. It still ties in to that last piece that I wanted to mention before we run out of time, that comes up in like every single topic of conversation of how do you get over creative burnout? How do you like find inspiration again? And pretty much every single avenue I've searched, and it's so easy when you just see it written on like a dumb blog or like a news article that it's like, go outside, touch grass, find a different hobby. But like, that's the thing is like, they're fucking right. Like go outside, take a 15 minute walk, inject some sunshine into your veins. I started roller skating in the spring, which is the complete opposite of graphic design. And I can't tell you how many times I learned how to do something on the roller skates or learned how to do it better. And the absolute like childish glee I had that I've literally never felt since I was a child of like figuring out how to do a trick or like how to literally skate forward down a trail and then get faster and faster and better. Like it's indescribable. And I think that's something that we're always seeking in our creative pursuits, like that feeling of like childlike glee of like, oh my God, I've created something amazing with my own two hands. I'm more powerful than God. But, you know, you look at what you're doing at work and sometimes, you know, maybe it's not what you want to be doing at
sometimes
that moment.
Sometimes you're just making a Google display ad.
Yeah, right. Sometimes you're just making a Google display ad.
Because there's not necessarily a result, right? Like, yeah. So sometimes we make something and it's literally an idea that's not meant for the world. It's meant to like make a client excited or show them what you can do. But then even we'll make something, we'll put it on the world and we can't see the interaction it creates. Yeah. But when you learn a new trick, you watch it happen, you see transformation in front of you. So there's
you get the metrics, the KPIs, social media engagement.
You never share
engagement.
Me the metrics.
I'm going to get metrics on my roller skating.
I'm kidding, because I thought you were going to say I don't show up to those meetings.
I'm going to get my metrics on my mood when I skate so that
like
I can so I can quantify my serotonin versus roller skating and graphic design.
On social media, you're like, this is my applause for performance well done.
Yeah. I think creatives also very much seek validation in being told like, oh, what you made is amazing. What you made is great because it makes you feel good.
That's actually more so with younger generations too, from growing up with social media. There's like this need for immediate feedback and like direct.
So that's like a generational gap, right? Like both of you experience with me is like, I don't think that way, right? I don't think to give you immediate, I almost think it's patronizing a little.
Like demeaning.
Right. Just to say like, you did a great job. Versus like, no, let's dig into this. Maybe it's not a good job.
Feedback. So not like praise, just feedback.
Yeah. Okay. See, I read just that like, as praise.
Just like, no, not praise.
Acknowledgement.
You're thinking everyone gets a trophy. Not everyone gets a trophy.
Not everyone gets a trophy.
It's acknowledgement.
You earn your trophies.
I do. I really do. And I want to earn my trophies, but like, you know, the acknowledgement and the validation is important. But I think also sometimes in the creative field, there is that loop of like acknowledgement and validation that you want. And then you realize that that's actually not making you happy anyway, because
there's also like the sense of self that like I took a course that kind of broke down how artists are infusing their own identity into their work and like why lack of representation for artists like impacts like the art that's created and who's seeing the art and blah, blah, blah. But so like when you are getting feedback on your art, it is art, having to like detach it from your sense of self and like your personal art and your style is difficult.
That's something that they didn't teach us in design school either. It was, you know, the warning of, hey, you are creating work and you might be really passionate about it and it might be something that really interests you, but you have to understand that 90% of the time or however many percent of the time you're delivering work to a client and they don't care about that aspect specifically.
Especially with like marketing too, where it's like you as the creator, like your own identity, experiences, biases, like are impacting the work that you create. But for marketing, like you need to be unbiased. Like you need to be targeting like a specific demographic group that like may not have those same experiences. So how do you translate that?
Yeah. How do you be proud of your work, but also understand that
it's for someone else.
Yeah. Or a bunch of people might not like it. And it's not a personal attack against you. It's just the work that you were asked to create doesn't resonate with a certain group of people. It's not your fault. Like you're not a terrible creative. You're not a terrible writer. You didn't make a terrible video. It's just, that was the ask. You did what you were paid to do. Some people didn't like it. You know, how do you get over, I did it because I was paid to do it versus I did it because I was paid to do it. And also I felt really passionate about it, but now I have to kind of separate myself emotionally so that I don't get sad when somebody doesn't like it. You pick up roller skating or you pick up, like I started building those little like book nook dioramas where you literally just have like, it's a bunch of sheets of plywood and you construct it like all with your hands together and glue it all up. And you have like a little tiny house that you can slot into your bookshelf. Best 8 hours I've spent in this past month.
Huh.
It was very fun. But again, had nothing to do with design. It was very like you said, a mindless task. I was literally taking tiny little pieces and putting them together for 8 hours, not straight, like broken up between like 3 days. But I realized I was giving my brain a chance to breathe and to calm down and not think about anything other than like how to put together this tiny miniature freaking IKEA set. and it felt good. It's different for everyone. Like, I don't think there is any one concrete answer of like, oh, this is how all creatives should solve their creative burnout, or how all creatives should tend to their creative burnout. It's very much like you have to find what personally works for you the best and just not give up. There's this, I don't even remember where it originated from. I think it's like, there's a clip of it on YouTube. I think he's a Japanese tennis player.
Oh my God.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, it's just so niche and random.
I think it was a Japanese tennis player, and he made like a motivational video where he was like, don't give up. And he's standing in like waiters in like the icy.
See, this is funny.
Japanese
to me
ocean.
You can like the resolution to someone's creative burnout can be social media.
Yeah.
Because for me, social media is like the cause of my burnout.
But then you come across this like old video of like this Japanese man in like full waders going, don't give up. If I can harvest Asiatic clams in like 0 degree water, you can do anything.
And I just cut to V just like a tear running on her face, like, yes, thank you. Again.
Sometimes you just need to hear those words out loud.
Yeah.
Even if it's like on a video completely unrelated to you.
If you're working on something and you are struggling and feeling burned out, I went, V, you can do anything. You would pull out an imaginary knife and threaten me.
I would toss you out the second story window.
Yeah. See, you sound all nice with great solutions here on this podcast, but no one knows that you bully me.
There's a difference, because sometimes you're just like sitting at home alone. You're sad because you're like, I can't be creative. I don't know how to make ideas. Like, what are you supposed to do? Go like seek out your boss, hold them at knife point and be like, why aren't you helping me? No, that's an at work problem. Okay. At home, you can find funny little motivational videos that speak to your heart and make you feel a little bit better for a couple of minutes.
And that's why your brand should be creating funny, entertaining, and inspiring content on socials.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then at work, you should, if you're lucky or you're privileged enough to work in an environment where you can approach your boss, your creative director, your whoever it is, and say, hey, I'm really struggling with this one particular I did that to you. Like, I don't remember what project it was, but I was like, James, like, I don't know. Like, I can't go past this point. And you're like, okay, let's go play basketball in the warehouse. And I was like, what?
Oh, well, there was one where you were struggling on something and it was like, I want to say 3 o'clock. And you were like, I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm going home. And you walked out the door and I was standing with a client. And instead of like, I went, hey, that was V. She needs to go. Like, I was like, no big deal. Like, the work will be great. And like, some part of my brain was going, should I have explained that more thoroughly?
No, that was probably perfect.
I was like, yeah, should I have explained? Like, no, like, she's putting on a little show. Like, the work's going to be good. But I was like, no, like, it's fine. Like, that was me. That's the way it goes around here.
You can tell how, like, where I am in my burnout versus like when, how I externalize it, because I stop caring about what comes out of my mouth. I've been trying really hard to be more careful about that in like the past month and like censor myself a little bit, but also not censor myself to the point where I'm like, haha, I'm totally fine. Like, no, maybe I'm not fine, but maybe I should change how I outwardly express that at work, perchance.
And maybe also, like, it's okay that you come into work and aren't okay. Like,
yeah,
there is a work-life balance, but they do correlate with each other. Like, personal life does impact your work life, and your work life impacts your personal life.
Yeah, and that's like an element of, and you'd probably throw data at this, but like psychological safety, like that feeling that mm-hmm. I am safe to express what I think, what I feel, what I want, what I need, and that I will not be attacked for it or I will not be judged.
I feel very lucky to come into work and know that I can feel safe if I don't feel okay. Like, there are days when I don't feel okay, but I can still come into work. But I know that I don't have to fully censor myself because, A, I'm not trying to drag anyone down with me. I'm not sitting there trying to complain about everything. I just don't feel 100%. And if I need help that particular day, I will say something.
It's largely due to the leaders of the company. There's one survey.
You're trying to blame us. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Can't argue with the stats. There's one survey that found that when the skills were rated either like a 9 or a 10 by the employees, they had on average a psychological safety score of 84%. Mm-hmm. And then below a 6, the rating was 36%.
Do you feel psychological safety here, Sam? Because when you're upset, you make it very clear you're upset. But you then refuse to talk to me.
I can't. It's unprofessional.
I will sit down right in front of her and go,
I'll be like, I'm here for
you
to because
talk.
She won't even say, I don't want to.
She'll stare me in the eyes like, get the fuck away from me.
Saying some real unprofessional things.
You're allowed to.
No.
You're allowed to.
You're allowed to.
That's what Samantha is for.
Yeah.
And then she's, you know, that's what your manager is for. Well, my manager.
Well, that's still psychological safety because you have a manager that you can approach to and be like, hey, I feel really comfortable.
Exactly.
Just like being completely unprofessional to get things off my chest. But there's also a lot of people in the creative industry who don't have that same like work environment that they feel safe to be like, yeah, I can talk to my boss about this, or like, yeah, I do feel like my manager is supportive enough where I can bring my problems to them and have them help me. And then I don't have creative burnout because I have to take care of 50 different things all by myself. Like,
yeah. And if you can't talk to your co-host, who can you talk to?
Yeah.
Well, one day we'll set a microphone down and I'll vent all my problems and swear a bunch. And
that's how you can tell upset. That she, those times she's actually mad at me.
It's never like you directly.
Yeah.
It's always like
situation.
It's you in passing, just not directly.
Yeah. You as part of a larger organization beyond your control.
I'm always here.
Thank you.
He's literally right here.
Yeah. I will find you just so I can disrupt your workflow. Always. You know I will.
And if your workflow is disrupted, then you know that you're going to have a very creatively productive day. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully more, you know, data and stats productive than creative productive, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Was there anything else in your discussion, your car ride, that you want to discuss in this topic?
No, I think that more than covered the car conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
The car conversation was like,
it was just 15
minutes long.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I think then we talked about everything. And we got to let V get back to...
All right, that's $200 for that therapy session.
Yeah. Yes, you can pay us in roller skates, skating lessons.
No, I actually charge people because I don't know if you've heard, but Kevin refers to me as the design therapist because Kevin comes to me with his problems.
Mark Mamsey was like, we should start, like, everyone comes down to the production den to, like, vent about their problems. Like, we should start charging people.
Or just, like, a rule, like, you bring a snack.
Yeah, or like, Snoop Dogg wine.
Or a beverage or something.
Yeah. True. Oh, we almost didn't mention Snoop Dogg wine. It's because we don't have a bottle here today.
Yeah. Okay, so next week, we'll have Swav.
So I'll be guest next time. He keeps getting bumped. It's our apologies.
Sorry, Swav.
Yes. We'll get him back on the slate.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure, for the next one.
Yes.
It's going to be a good episode. Tune in.
Yes. We'll have Snoop Dogg wine. And then, so we'll talk then. Bye. You have to end every recording with, that was great. Let's do it one more time. This time I'll hit it.